From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Mother Nature may not be kind, but she is even-handed. When the planet gets too warm in the tropics, she moves the extra heat to the northern waters. That's what the Gulf Stream does. But nature has a faster way to suck up all that heat and move it north. It's called a hurricane. Violent, often deadly, but very effective. Well, we are only halfway through the Atlantic hurricane season this year, and there have already been 9 storms big enough to earn a name. That's a record. The latest, Irene, is now fizzling out in the open waters far off Newfoundland. Meanwhile, back on dry land, an MIT researcher has set off a storm of debate among his colleagues with his new finding that hurricanes have nearly doubled in strength in the last 30 years. And that global warming is the reason. If he's right, and global warming is to blame, things are likely to get worse. This hour, On Point, hurricanes, hurricane intensity, and global warming. You can join the conversation. What do you think? What does the storm surge of the last decade tell you? Are we cooking up our own destruction? Join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We begin today with a weather report of sorts on this year's hurricane season. Krish Krishnamurti is professor of meteorology at Florida State University and joins me now from Tallahassee. Krish Krishnamurti, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Yeah.
So we heard about Irene getting close to shore. We've heard about a lot of storm activity in the Atlantic already in this season. 9, we're told that's an unusually large number.
That's correct, yeah. For this early in August, because we are still waiting for September and October, and so we can expect, I think, some more storms, yes.
What's the explanation for the large number of storms so far this year? Is it clear why it's happening?
We look at a number of factors all the way out from Africa. We look at the rainfall and the waves, African waves that form there and move on westwards towards us. And we look for ocean temperatures. We look for some other conditions like winds not changing much with height. And so all of this was favorable around 10 to 12 degrees north. That was the alley along which a number of these storms came through the Caribbean, making impact on Mexico and also the Gulf Mexico coast. And it's not that unusual in some sense, because in 1933 we had 21 storms, and 1995 we had 19 storms.
Mm-hmm.
If we go this year, we have had so far 6, and most projections are for around 20 this year. Both the Hurricane Center and there are others who are looking at the long range, looking at many factors and coming with numbers close to 20. So 20 has happened before. And so, but anyway, this early in the season, having 6 of them, which made landfall, was indeed quite unusual. In July especially, we had so many of these storms making landfall. Yes.
And last year, Hurricane Dennis, Pectawalip, reached Category 4 on July 7th, the earliest Caribbean storm on record to reach that strength, if
that's
I've got
correct.
That right.
Yes, that's correct.
So as you sit watching right now, is the successor to Irene already out there? Can you see it? Can you see that Irene's gone?
Today the Hurricane Center is flying their aircraft, and they have a suspected region in the Atlantic, but it doesn't look very potent at the moment, yes.
But maybe another 10 on the way, and as you say...
African waves are coming one after the other. That is correct, yes.
Krish Krishnamurti in Tallahassee, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Krish Krishnamurti, professor of meteorology at Florida State University. We are talking this hour about intense hurricanes and their possible hotly debated link to global warming. Joining me now in the studio is Carrie Emanuel. He's professor of meteorology in the Department of Earth, Atmospheric, and Planetary Sciences at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Carrie Emanuel, thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
So you have thrown a big rock in the pond here and got all kinds of people buzzing. We want to be sure we understand exactly what you're asserting.
Well, I looked at a different measure of storm activity than most people have looked at over the years. We tend to focus on the frequency of events, how many storms occur per year,
mm-hmm.
and that's fine. if you look around the globe, not just in the Atlantic, but the whole globe, there are about 90 storms, plus or minus 10 per year.
Mm-hmm.
And that number has been rock steady for quite a long time.
And you're saying storms of a certain magnitude,
storms that reach tropical storm strength or greater. Mm-hmm. And so there is no real trend in the numbers of hurricanes. Now, if you look at just the Atlantic, which has only about 11% of the global total, you see big swings in this number that are fairly strongly related to known climate phenomena, natural climate phenomena like El Nino. But again, you don't see any trend in the global total number.
Now, as Mr. Krishnamurti just said, we've seen other highs in the frequency. But you've looked at intensity. How do you measure that? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I was looking at a measure of how much energy a hurricane uses over its life. And I was motivated to do that because I'm interested in the effects of hurricanes on the upper ocean. They strongly mix the upper ocean.
By that, you mean the top layer of the ocean.
That's right. And so this measure depends not just on the wind speed in the storm. It does depend on that. But it also depends on how long the storm lasts.
So there's a kind of equation there, wind speed plus duration or something like that.
That's
Okay.
And when I looked at this measure, I was expecting to see the usual climate signals like El Nino that we see in other measures of hurricane activity. But I was surprised by the fact that when you look, again, around the world, you see this big upward trend over the last 30 to 50 years, so that this particular measure of energy consumption has almost doubled in that time.
And, so what you're doing is taking a kind of a cumulative tally of wind speeds and hurricane durations.
Yes, that's right.
And when you add that all up, you see a spike in the last half century.
That's right. And what was interesting about this is two things. First of all, it was global. There are a few places where this actually went down, for example, the northeastern Pacific.
But when you add it all up in aggregate.
When you add it all up, it's gone up quite a bit. And the other thing that surprised me is that this measure is very well correlated with sea surface temperatures over in the tropical regions, so that when the sea surface temperature goes up, this measure goes up. When it goes down, this measure goes down. And especially in the Atlantic, where we have particularly good records of hurricane intensity, not perfect, but better than other places, this correlation is quite striking.
So speed plus intensity, you wrap that together, add it all up, and find an aggregate, a global increase in hurricane intensity or ferocity, whatever word you want to put on it. And then the next step you make, and you began to allude to it just here, is you link that to global warming. How do you make that link?
Well, the link is made this way. We see this very nice correlation with sea surface temperature, but we only have good, reliable records of hurricane wind speeds going back 50 years or so in the Atlantic and in the northwestern Pacific. And we don't have records even that long elsewhere in the world. So it's if you had to look at just the hurricane record globally, you couldn't say very much about what was causing things to change. But this correlation with sea surface temperature was interesting. And in particular, the big upswing we've seen in tropical sea surface temperatures in the last 30 to 50 years.
Big to meteorologists. Yeah. It's about 1 degree
it's
Celsius.
It's about half a degree
half
Celsius.
Half a degree
it's
Celsius.
It's really small in absolute terms.
But in your world, that's big.
It's a big number. And that increase went along with an increase in this measure of hurricane activity. And the important thing is that that increase has been attributed by the people who study tropical sea surface temperatures to global warming. In fact, we have not seen tropical sea surface temperatures this high in the instrumental record, which goes back, depending on where you are, between, say, 50 and 150 years. And the paleoclimatologist who try to reconstruct sea surface temperature from geological proxies believe that this big ups with this high temperature we've seen in the last 50 years is unprecedented in the last 1,000 years. And that's why we think we're seeing a global warming signal.
So you accept that the warming comes from man-made emissions that are driving global warming, and then you say, chart these two things together, and what, they coincide so directly, the rising intensity of hurricanes and that man-made global warming, that there's your link.
That's right. And while the hurricane record only goes back 50 years or so, the sea surface temperature record goes back depending on how you look at it, 100 or 150 years, or maybe even 1,000 years if you accept the geological proxies for sea surface temperature.
Now, you know, there's a lot of debate, suspicion, emotion around this. Even though scientists are pretty solidly lined up that global warming's happening, that still gets debate. And then when you begin to make links like this, debates again. You haven't always been pushing this line. As I look back at the record of what you've been saying, you're a rather recent convert to this view.
Well, that's right. I think everybody makes up their own mind about things. When the debate really started getting going in the late 1980s, there wasn't at that time all that much evidence for. There were some, and I was skeptical. Skeptical is not the same thing as negative. Mm-hmm. Skeptical mm-hmm. is you have an open mind, you're not quite mm-hmm. sure what's going on.
Well, certainly but not convinced one way or the other at that point.
But so many indicators have gone so far out of their normal ranges in the last few decades that I think most of us believe that the world really is warming and that it is owing to our influence through pumping a lot of greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, plus the fact that both theory and models suggest we should see that.
And we've seen since 1995 in particular a real spike, a real upward spike in
the Atlantic. In the Atlantic, we've seen a big upward spike in the last 10 years. That's right, and in sea surface temperature.
If this is related to man-made global warming, will it get worse before it gets better, if it gets better?
Well, if it is related to global warming, it's going to get worse. Everybody agrees on that point because the effects of pumping all these gases in the atmosphere take a while to show up. And, of course, we're still pumping gases into the atmosphere. One has to be a little bit careful about this. If you narrowly focus on the Atlantic, which mm-hmm. is a pretty small place, mm-hmm. the tropical Atlantic, these global warming signals are superimposed on very big natural fluctuations.
Looks big, but it's a small part of the whole planet. Kerry Emanuel from MIT is looking at the whole thing. We're talking this hour about hurricanes, hurricane intensity, and global warming. What does the storm surge of the last decade and more tell you? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this morning or today about hurricanes, hurricane intensity, and global warming with an MIT researcher who says we are cranking up the temperature and the ferocity of the global environment. Kerry Emanuel is with us. He's professor of meteorology at MIT. He published a study in the August 5th issue of Nature magazine, headline, "The Increasing Destructiveness of Tropical Cyclones Over the Past 30 Years." You may have seen it. What do you think? Is this a natural cycle or a man-made storm machine? Have you seen the intensity of these storms? Does it look natural to you? Are we roiling our own planet or telling ourselves global warming ghost stories here? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Kerry Emanuel is with me in the studio today. We're joined right now from Miami, Florida, by Christopher Lancy. He's research meteorologist at Hurricane Research Division of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA. Christopher Lancy, thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, glad to help. How are you doing today?
We're great. Now, we have looked back at the record, and we see that this is a pretty high-tension argument. Earlier this year, you, if I've got this right, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you resigned from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change when a colleague on the panel, Kevin Trenberth, supported a link between warming, global warming, and storms in a press conference there. That set you right off that panel. Now, Kerry Emanuel is out with this research. You've been sort of even-handed in your critique of it. What's your bottom line view?
Well, Professor Emanuel has done wonderful work over the last few decades in hurricanes, not only just the theoretical climate studies, but also in understanding the dynamics of day-to-day storms. And so any work that Kerry is publishing has to be taken very seriously. And of course, hurricanes are a very scary topic to the public. Living here in Miami and having experienced the aftermath of Hurricane Andrew, hurricanes are something that are extremely destructive. They're arguably the most destructive natural phenomenon on Earth for a one-day event. So any potential link between global warming and hurricanes in a serious study, we have to take a close look at and try to understand as best we can.
So give us a more detailed critique here. I guess there are two pieces to this. First of all, do you agree that hurricanes are increasing in intensity? Kerry Emanuel has them doubling in intensity, as he defines it, over the last 30 or 40, 50 years. And do you believe that that intensity is related to man-made global warming?
Yeah, very, very good questions. What we've uncovered previously is that we have cycles of hurricane activity, where you go 25 to 40 years very busy, and 25 to 40 years fairly quiet. And it's the same aspect that Professor Emanuel is looking at, the intensity of the winds and how long they last. We had been in a very busy period from the late 1920s to the late 1960s, and then there was a lull, a very distinct lull, mm-hmm. from around 1970 through 1994, and in the last 10 years have been very busy. I think everyone would agree on that part. And the question is the last 10 years, especially in the Atlantic hurricanes, are they unprecedented in their intensity and duration and numbers, or are we seeing a repeat of what happened in the middle part of the 20th century? If you actually look at the raw data, the original hurricane database, there's no global warming signal. What Professor Emanuel has to do to find that is to employ a bias correction where he's actually reducing the winds during the middle part of the 20th century. And he has some justifiable reasons for doing so.
Give us a sense of why you'd use a bias correction in research.
Yeah. It was actually, he's using some of my work that I did in graduate school back in the early 90s, where I identified a inconsistency between the winds in the database and the pressures, because there's two ways to measure how strong a hurricane is. One is with what the peak winds are, mm-hmm. and one is with the low pressures. And I found an inconsistency in time, and back in the early 90s, we thought that perhaps we overstated how strong the hurricanes were back in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s.
So Kerry Emanuel corrects for that and comes to his conclusion. You're not willing to make that jump?
Well, there's two reasons why. First of which is that he's employing a very powerful bias correction, even stronger than what I had recommended in my paper in 1993. And secondly, we've learned quite a bit in the last 10 years. Specifically, we've learned that there's stronger winds at the ocean surface than what we'd previously believed. And we've actually boosted up the intensity of some hurricanes. In particular, Hurricane Andrew, we reanalyzed officially to be a Category 5 when it hit Miami rather than a Category 4. And it's very possible that instead of weakening the winds in the 50s and 60s, as Professor Emanuel has done fairly strongly, perhaps there's only a small bias needs correcting, mm-hmm. and perhaps it's the more recent storms during the lull mm-hmm. that need the winds increasing. It's a bit complicated. But
we understand it. I want to understand, Chris Lancey, then you're remaining a skeptic on both counts. Do I hear you saying you're a skeptic on global warming itself and on the increased hurricane intensity?
Well, that's a couple different issues there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, certainly I'm not convinced with this study that there's a strong global warming hurricane signal. In fact, I'm not sure if there's any at all. But the other question, you know, we've certainly had about 1 degree Fahrenheit warming in the last 100 years, about a half degree Celsius mm-hmm. or so. Everyone is, I would say, would agree. The question is what's causing that? And, it's definitely not a yes or no question. We've certainly been adding a lot of carbon dioxide and methane. We're changing the chemistry. We're changing the radiation of the atmosphere. That has warmed the atmosphere. Now, how much? I don't really know, and I'm not an expert in that field.
Mr. Lancey, help us understand the kind of turbocharged environment in which this debate is taking place. I mean, I'm sure there's more to it than we'll get to right now, but when you resigned from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, when Kevin Trenberth stepped forward to support this link between global warming and storms early this year, why were you on such a hair trigger to do that? Are you charging that there's a politicized vein of research here? Is it something we'll understand, or is it personal?
No, I don't think it's personal, and I'm not sure the motivations of other individuals. But what I was concerned about was that a lead author in this Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change decided to hold a press conference with no results, with no science, and basically scare people that there is a link between global warming and hurricanes.
But you're not putting Kerry Emanuel in that same descriptor.
Well, no, it's because Professor Emanuel has done a very detailed study. Mm-hmm. He's gone through peer review and he's published it. And you know, I disagree with the results, but he's going through the right channels. I don't think it's appropriate, especially for someone who's very influential in the IPCC process, to disregard the scientific methods and and go right to the public with his gut feeling.
And that's what you saw earlier this year, but not in this case. Carrie Emanuel, you hear the critique from Christopher Lancey of the research you've done. You're clearly standing by it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do. But let me say that there's an important sense in which I agree with Chris on this, and that is that whether or not one applies the bias correction that I did in The Atlantic, it's if I had to rely on just the record of Atlantic hurricanes alone, I would never have come to the conclusion mm-hmm. that there's a global warming signal. I don't think it's justified. And that's true whether or not one makes the bias correction. The Atlantic is so dominated by natural cycles that I wouldn't want to make that connection.
But you've looked globally and made it.
There are two things that persuaded me taken together. You know, it's like a lot of things in science. There may be 10 pieces of evidence, none of which is a smoking gun, mm-hmm. but which when taken collectively sort of point a finger.
There it is.
And what persuaded me was that you see this signal in the western North Pacific, which is the other place where we have at least some aircraft observations
right.
of hurricanes. And although I didn't publish this in the Nature paper, you also see it in the southern hemisphere, where unfortunately one has to rely exclusively on satellites to make intensity estimates. And those only go back about 25 years. Mm. Nevertheless, the same magnitude of upswing was seen there. So you have that. And then you have the fact that it is so nicely correlated with tropical surface temperature for reasons I don't know, actually. I don't know why it is. It just is everywhere you look. And in contrast to the hurricanes, that sea surface temperature record goes back a long time.
And at a certain point, you can't look away from that correlation
right.
any longer. Carrie Emanuel, Christopher Lancey, please stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation from Minneapolis, Kevin Campion. He is Executive Vice President at Benfield, Inc. It's a reinsurance brokerage firm, the world's largest independent reinsurance broker. Tracks and thinks a lot about hurricanes. Mr. Campion, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Insurance companies really care about these things because you end up paying out when the hurricanes run into all that development that we're doing along coasts in the world these days. $23 billion in claims last year. Do you think you're seeing more intense hurricanes from your very close observation?
I would say that just as this debate is outlining between the professors, that the insurance industry is keenly concerned about whether indeed the frequency and intensity is increasing. But again, insurance companies are not experts on global warming. And as you can see, there's a heated debate. So I do think they're monitoring it very closely. And I know that major reinsurance companies, Munich Re and Lloyd's of London, have initiated their own studies to try and determine it. And I don't believe any of them have been conclusive, but certainly the insurance industry is very concerned about the possibility that global warming is increasing hurricane frequency and intensity.
You are very attuned to hurricane damage and the payouts that come from that. Remind us from Andrew sort of through Dennis here of the kind of blows that the insurance industry has taken under these powerful, very destructive hurricanes.
Well, back in 1992 in August when Hurricane Andrew made landfall in Homestead, Florida, it caused the largest natural disaster with $17 billion worth of loss, insured loss, to insurance companies throughout the country from that one event. And then that loss potential erased for one of the world's largest insurance companies all of the accumulated profits they had made throughout their writing throughout the country since they began writing business back
wow.
in the 1930s. So
in one storm.
One storm in 24 hours. So that was very significant. It also, last year, as you had mentioned, the $23 billion in losses
mm-hmm.
that occurred wiped out substantially all the accumulated profits that insurance companies had made since Hurricane Andrew. So obviously insurance companies are very concerned about the loss potential and are trying to get a handle on what that loss potential is by using insurance hurricane projection models.
Right, but do those still work if global warming gets thrown into the formula?
Well, that's one of the big debates, is how much of an impact would global warming have on the models? And to date, none of the major modelers have incorporated the issue of global warming, given the fact that the debate is so hotly contested, that the reason they would use a global warming analysis, if you will, would be to assure that the rates that they were charging their policyholders were adequate.
And to ensure that they don't go broke.
Absolutely, that as well.
So let me ask you, Mr. Campion, if Kerry Emanuel is correct, and if we have a link between these things, if we've got growing intensity and global warming pushing it, and we hear that there's dissent on this, but if he's right, is there a point at which you can no longer ensure these coastal areas? If we get ever mounting intensity here, is there a point at which either premiums become so high or damage becomes so costly that it's just not a viable proposition?
Well, certainly that's the ultimate question, but to that, it depends on what the trend in global warming is. I mean, as was stated by one of your earlier panelists, there has been decadal variation, so that even if there isn't a global warming issue, or whether there is, just the variation decade to decade may be more significant than the global warming trend. Mm. And so I would give you as evidence to the ability to continue to insure coastal properties the fact that in Florida, approximately 30% of the homeowners' policies are written by a state-sponsored insurance company,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Citizens Insurance. So clearly it is an acute issue, and I do think that people are looking for solutions to that.
Kevin Campion, reinsurance broker in Minneapolis, Minnesota, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Looking at hurricanes, hurricane intensity, and global warming. Chris Lancey, there you hear the insurance view. I mean, some astounding numbers there. One major insurance company losing all its profits, equivalent to all its profits since it was formed, in one hurricane with Andrew, and more big numbers in the decades since. Do you think that we can practically count on this being cyclical? I mean, if it doesn't turn down again at some point, if it keeps mounting, as Kerry Emanuel suggests global warming would produce, we've got a real problem here.
Right. It is cyclical with the activity, but the damage is not. What we've seen with Andrew, and even last year, is that these mounting costs are not due to increased severity of the hurricanes. What they are due to is more people living along the coast. The coastal populations along the Gulf and Atlantic coasts are doubling every 20, 30
mm-hmm.
years.
Surging, yeah.
And the people living along the coast are very wealthy communities in general. In fact, per capita, you know, people have twice as much stuff as their parents did and four times as much wealth as their grandparents.
So when the storms hit, there's a lot to break. Kerry Emanuel, if you could whisper in the ear of one of those homeowners along the coast or the insurance industry insuring there, given what you found, what does this suggest? If it's going to get worse because global warming's, you know, that's still on an upturn, does it mean we're simply going to have more powerful punches along the coast, more damage?
It's a question of statistics. It depends on your time horizon. If you're looking only in the Atlantic and only for 20 or 30 years, then you should be concerned about the natural cycles. And as Chris said, the big problem really is demographic. Even if hurricanes weren't changing at all these people are moving to the coast and building structures in harm's way. If, on the other hand, your perspective is global, as it might be for a reinsurance company, or your perspective is 50 to 100 years, even if it's just in the Atlantic, then global warming might be something you should be concerned about. So it's a question of numbers in your horizon.
Where you stand, what you've got invested in, and how long the time horizon is. But there's the claim, greater intensity, global warming behind it. Chris Lancey, we appreciate your critique this morning, and we thank you for being with us.
Glad to help out.
Christopher Lancey, research meteorologist at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. He joined us from Miami, Florida. Listeners, we're talking this hour about hurricanes, hurricane intensity, and global warming. You can join us. What does the storm surge of the last decade and more tell you? If the planet gets warmer, will this get worse? And what's the real culprit in destruction? Intense storms or intense development at the shore? Are you headed inland? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Later in this hour, we'll check in on the latest developments in the Gaza pullout. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at Bicon.com, B-I-C-O-N.com, and Private Wealth Management at Babson Capital. For more than 60 years, helping clients build and preserve wealth through financial planning, investment management, and trust services. In Cambridge and on the web at BabsonCapital.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about hurricane intensity and global warming with an MIT researcher who says we are cranking up the temperature and the ferocity of the global environment. Cary Emanuel's with us. He's professor of meteorology at MIT. You can join us as well. If the planet gets warmer, will this get worse? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You look back last summer, four strong hurricanes struck Florida, Japan hit by a record 10 typhoons, and Brazil, where they don't have hurricanes, unexpectedly struck in March 2004 by Katerina, the first ever recorded hurricane to develop in the southern Atlantic Ocean. What's going on here? Jeff is calling from Marlborough, Massachusetts. Jeff, you're on the air.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a sailor who spends most of my cruising season, which is in the winter down in the Caribbean, and during the summer when hurricane season is in full force, mm-hmm. you have to store your boat.
Okay.
And typically the insurance companies tell you you have to store it below, south of the hurricane belt, which is at 12 degrees.
Mm-hmm. Where is 12 degrees? Put that on a map for us, Jeff.
That's Grenada.
Mm-hmm.
Grenada is right at 12 degrees.
Okay, so south of south or north, south of Grenada, they want you then.
That's correct, because mm-hmm. typically hurricanes don't go south of 12 degrees.
Okay.
But one of the problems with the insurance companies is that last year there was a major hurricane which went through Grenada, caused lots of damage.
Yep.
So now they're going to be moving all the boats down to Trinidad, which what they're doing is they're condensing all the yachts into one area. So that when a hurricane does strike, and it will eventually hit Trinidad,
mm-hmm.
you could have massive losses there.
So we're trying to gauge our sympathy here. You're spending the winter yachting in the Caribbean, so there's a limit to our sympathy. On the other hand, we get it. You're having to go further and further south or being pushed there by insurance companies apparently to avoid what feels like an expanding hurricane belt.
What's going to happen, though, is that hurricanes will eventually go south. So insurance companies are creating a huge bucket of loss because they're, you know, all the boats have to go there. So when a hurricane
see the juicy target that might be created. But what do you think about the essential premise that Cary Emanuel puts up here? Jeff, you're out on that sea. The surface temperatures are warmer. Do you see the greater intensity of storms?
Well,
do you buy that it's related to global warming?
This year I can tell you that it was much warmer than normal because I'm a diver, and I could tell the water was 1 to 2 degrees warmer than it's been in the past. And I could tell that the hurricane season was getting more active earlier. And, you know, we left the boat in the beginning of July, and you could tell it was getting bad down there at that point.
You can taste it. You can feel it. Jeff, we wish you smooth sailing and keep that fine boat safe. I want to turn right now to Woods Hole, Massachusetts. We're joined there by Ray Schmidt, senior scientist at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution. Ray Schmidt, thanks for being with us.
Hello, Tom. I'm glad to be here.
So you hear the debate, and you hear the sailor calling in saying it all feels warmer to him. I know you don't follow hurricanes, but you follow global warming and sea temperatures very closely at Woods Hole. Does it feel right to you? Are you ready to sort of get on in the sidecar with Cary Emanuel here and imagine that, indeed, we've got a link, we've got more fierce hurricanes because of global warming?
Well, I think I am, and I'll tell you why. And that's because the enormous heat content of the ocean. We've seen a modest increase in atmospheric temperatures of a half a degree centigrade or so mm-hmm. over the past 100 years, but we've seen an even smaller change in ocean temperatures but the depth of the temperature change in the ocean is actually quite deep. We've seen warming in the ocean down to 1,000 meters depth in many ocean basins. And so what this means is that the ocean temperatures increase that we've seen represents a lot more heat, a lot more heat energy than has influenced the atmosphere. In fact, over the past 50 years, we have do have some record of ocean temperature changes, heat content changes, and we find that the ocean has gained 30 times as much heat as the atmosphere.
And that's going to go somewhere, Kerry Emanuel, effectively saying it's going into more fierce hurricanes.
Well, and that stands to good reason, because the fuel for hurricanes is warm water. Warm water loves to evaporate a lot more than cold water does, and that's what supplies the energy to hurricanes.
What trend line are we on, Ray Schmidt? Are we going to have even warmer oceans? And if we do, what's that, more fuel for hurricanes?
Well, we see a lot of variability in the ocean heat content record. There are decadal changes, particularly when you look from basin to basin, Atlantic versus Pacific. But there is an upward trend that is likely due to global warming. And one aspect of the whole physics of the ocean that I'm particularly interested in is how effectively you can mix that heat that's put in by the sun shining on the surface
Yes.
of this dark blue ocean, mm-hmm. how effectively you mix that down into the water column.
And if you mix it more deeply, is that good or bad, or what's the implication?
Well, that means you store more heat in the ocean, which is one way of explaining what we've seen in the ocean temperature record.
Mm-hmm.
It also means that you may be driving what we call the thermohaline circulation more intensely. And one of the several interesting aspects of Kerry's work is that he suggests that the fact that we will have that we may have these more intense hurricanes, we would be getting more mixing in the tropical ocean. This is all part of what we call the thermohaline circulation, where cold water sinks at high latitudes.
Right.
Well, the cold water has to get warmed up again in the tropics, and so the only way it can do that is by mixing, by vertical mixing.
Right, right.
And it takes energy to do that vertical mixing, and hurricanes are a particularly good source of energy for mixing.
They mix it up in a huge way, but Kerry Emanuel, if hurricanes are stirring the ocean harder and harder, from your research, does this buy us time on global warming, or does it just deepen the depth of the warming and extend it in time?
Well, that's a good question, and in fact, this whole question of what happens to the thermohaline circulation is what motivated me to do the work in the first place. I was very interested in just the points that Ray Schmidt talked about. When you do something like that to the ocean over a few decades, the ocean reacts on somewhat longer timescales than the atmosphere. It takes it a while. And so initially, heat does build up in the oceans. And we would expect, if things work the way we think them do, that this would ultimately result in an acceleration of this thermohaline circulation. That would take some of the warm water and move it to higher latitudes.
And that means?
That the effect of global warming, if this all happens, would be somewhat more pronounced than maybe forecast at high latitudes, but somewhat less pronounced at low latitudes.
So batten the hatches if you're in the way. John is calling from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you doing?
Well, thanks. What do you think? What do you know?
Well, a couple of things. The last gentleman who was speaking, talking about the depth of the temperature, I guess makes me think in terms of like a thermal mass, I guess when I'm thinking about this. And to frame my question in that sense, is a correlation an exponential or a linear correlation? In other words, you talk about a half a degree rise in temperature, mm-hmm. which doesn't seem like a lot to me. But then when you talk about depth, I'm now thinking in terms of how much energy is really getting stored there.
Mm-hmm.
Is just a slight change potentially going to make a significant difference in this intensity level that you're talking about?
John,
is there a point at which you tip a balance at which that might start accelerating the intensity level?
We've got it. Our time is short. Kerry Emanuel?
Yes, a half a degree C warming of the surface of the ocean is significant from the point of view of hurricanes. It should result in an increase in wind speed of a few percent. But this measure I'm talking about, which is energy consumption, seems to go up a lot more than that. Also, the fact that you're warming not just the surface but a deeper layer is also significant for hurricanes because they are often limited in their intensity by the turning up of cold water from down below.
But if it's warmer, harder to reach it, if it's deeper down, they don't get that.
That's right.
Kerry, what's your message to Americans living along the coast, looking at the next 40, 50 years? Are you saying, you know, buy stronger shutters? It's almost baked in the cake at this point?
I have to admit that I would tell all of the people listening to this program to do that even if there weren't any changes in hurricanes, because as Chris Lancey properly mentioned, the real problem in the United States is demographic. We're just building a lot on the coastline. That's owing, among other things, to policy regarding the regulation of insurance.
But which the perfect storm comes when that development meets the rougher, tougher, more intense hurricane blowing in.
That's right. But I think the big problem is demographic, and on top of that, if you're looking out 50 to 100 years, you should start seeing the global warming effect as well.
And Ray Schmidt, we've just got half a minute here, but I guess the bottom line, if this is correct, is stop that global warming or we may have even worse storms down the pike.
Well, I think that's true, and we have to remember that the ocean has over 1,000 times the heat capacity of the atmosphere, so a millidegree change in the ocean is equivalent to 1 degree change in the atmosphere. And so these slight temperature changes in the ocean can have enormous effects on our future climate.
Well, batten down the hatches. We've got a glimpse of the future here this morning and the debate around it. Ray Schmidt, senior scientist at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Tom.
And Kerry Emanuel, professor of meteorology in the Department of Earth, Atmospheric, and Planetary Sciences at MIT. Kerry, thanks for joining us.
You're quite welcome.
You can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. In a moment, the latest on the Gaza pullout. This is On Point. This morning in Gaza, thousands of Israeli soldiers and police began the forced evacuation of settlers and their supporters. Some settlers had to be carried out of their homes. There are reports that 1,000 protesters barricaded themselves in a synagogue. Government eviction notices went into effect on Monday, and settlers had 48 hours to leave voluntarily. Officials say as many as half of Gaza's nearly 9,000 settlers defied the deadline. Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon, who ordered the evacuations, called the images of settlers being removed from their homes heartbreaking. For the very latest developments, we turn to Michael Matza, Jerusalem Bureau Chief for the Philadelphia Inquirer. He joins me now from Nev Dekalim, the settlement in Gaza. Michael, thanks for being with us. What do you see there now?
Well, Tom, there's been thousands of police and soldiers have been in here since last night, basically seizing control of this place, going door to door, trying to get people who are still in their homes to understand that they have to leave. They've been as sensitive as they can, but there are times when, after some patient negotiations, they've had to go in and carry people out. There's two elements. There's kind of the long-term residents here who are in their homes, and then they're sort of supporters and people who have infiltrated, many of them very young people from the West Bank, who've come here to sort of protest. And, you know, they've been having clashes with the security forces, and sometimes there have been fairly intense struggles that have resulted in busloads, you know, many busloads of demonstrators being arrested and taken out of here.
Michael, can you describe those clashes for us? The images from yesterday were of settlers and their supporters lecturing, begging, haranguing soldiers to leave them alone. Has it become more physical today, and how exactly?
Well, the younger people are kind of an action faction who are they're sort of trying to convince soldiers to, you know, disobey their orders, but they've also been lighting dumpsters, you know, arranging dumpsters into barricades, big plastic garbage dumpsters, and setting them ablaze, and, you know, creating flaming barricades on the streets, and so on and so forth. And when they encounter the security forces, they push and shove and fight with them. And so there were some punches thrown this morning, and you know, there's been some real altercations, but those have been mostly with the people who have sort of infiltrated here, and not fights per se with the residents of Nevadekalean, which is the largest of the Gaza Strip settlements.
Michael, is it clear where the end of this is going to be? Are there some bitter enders there who are prepared to really make a tough physical resistance, and how far might they go? Or are we going to see busloads headed out struggling but going?
Well, people are concerned that Kfar Darom, which is one of the most ideological and deeply entrenched of the settlements, there might be a bigger standoff there. The forces haven't really tried to take that place yet. But most of the other settlements are going there rather quickly. And, in fact, I think the commanders are feeling that they're sort of advancing this thing certainly on their schedule and maybe even a little ahead of their schedule.
Of course, just over the horizon, the Palestinians, the Palestinian factor. Is there any sign of the Palestinian presence where you are there at Nevdekalim yet, or is it all still far from where the settlers are?
Nevdekalim is close to Khan Yunis, which is the Palestinian side of Gaza, but there's no visible, you know, from here you just cannot see them. There's another part of inside the block of settlements, there's a Palestinian area called Mawasi, but again, these areas have been pretty much secluded from what's going on here, and there's, you know, for a view of what's happening on the Palestinian side, you have to be there, and frankly, I've been in Nevdekalim, so I can't tell you from there.
Nevdekalim, a very big settlement. When is it expected at this point that the last settlers will be gone? When do the bulldozers move in?
It's starting to look like, you know, the Israelis would like to get this done before the Sabbath on Friday, and I think they feel, military feels quite confident they're going to be able to do that. There's a large number of people in the central synagogue, which is going to require some negotiation and figuring out how they're going to get them out of there. And what happens next is eventually within the next couple of weeks there'll be some rudimentary deconstruction of these buildings. The Israeli forces will break the buildings so that they cannot be reoccupied. They'll take a wall off, or they'll cave in the roof, and then they're going to turn this over to recovery and removal effort that's going to be managed primarily by the Palestinians. They'll create some jobs. Before they do that, the Israelis will probably recover some recyclables, window frames and doors and whatever, and then the buildings are slated all to be razed.
Well, a dramatic series of days there in Gaza. We hear the wind blowing through those streets, and still all the settlers not gone, but things fully underway. Michael Matza, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure, Tom.
Michael Matza, Jerusalem Bureau Chief for the Philadelphia Inquirer. He spoke with me from the Nevdekalim settlement in Gaza. On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Julie Jopp, Eileen Imada, Stefano Katsonis, Matt Lieber, James Ross, Christina Russo, and Karen Schiffman. With help from Sarah Baker and Angel Cozzelli, our senior producer is Graham Griffith. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.